content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include U.S. regulators give full approval to Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, and Ford's Maverick truck attracts 100,000 reservations. And we'll begin with U.S. regulators give full approval to Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. The U.S. gave full approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine Monday, a milestone that could boost public confidence in the shots and spur more companies, universities, and local governments to make vaccinations mandatory. The Pentagon immediately announced it will press ahead with plans to require members of the military to get the vaccine as the U.S. and the world battle the extra-contagious Delta variant. The formula made by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech now carries the strongest endorsement from the Food and Drug Administration, which has never before had so much evidence to judge a shot's safety. More than 200 million Pfizer doses have been administered in the U.S. and hundreds of millions more worldwide under special emergency provisions since December. Vaccines are one of our greatest weapons against the virus, acting FDA Commissioner Janet Woodcock said. We hope this approval will bolster confidence in those who've been wavering. Pfizer said the U.S. is the first country to grant the company's vaccine full approval. The shot will be marketed in the United States under the brand name Comirnaty. On the heels of FDA full approval, President Joe Biden again urged unvaccinated Americans to get the shots. Speaking from the White House, he called the approval a key milestone in our nation's fight against COVID and stressed that inoculation saves lives. The coronavirus continues to be a pandemic of the unvaccinated, he said, adding that those awaiting final FDA approval no longer have a reason to delay. The moment you've been waiting for is here. It's time for you to go get your vaccination and get it today, Biden said. He also urged more leaders to require the shots as a way of to reach millions more people, adding that if you're a business leader, a nonprofit leader, state or local leader who has been waiting for full FDA approval to require vaccinations, I call on you now to do that. Require it. Moderna has also applied to the FDA for full approval of its vaccine. Johnson & Johnson, maker of the third option in the U.S., said it hopes to do so later this year. Just over half of the U.S. population is fully vaccinated. Vaccinations in this country bottomed out in July at an average of about 500,000 shots per day, down from a peak of 3.4 million a day in mid-April. As the Delta variant fills hospital beds, shots are on the rise again, with a million a day given Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Full approval of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine means it meets the same very high standards required of all the approved vaccines we rely on every day, said Dr. Jesse Goodman of Georgetown University, a former FDA vaccine chief. That should help anyone who still has concerns gain confidence in the shots. Earlier this month, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that he would seek the president's okay to make the vaccine mandatory by mid-September or once the FDA grants final approval, whichever comes first. On Monday, after the FDA acted, the Pentagon said guidance on vaccinations will be worked out and a timeline will be provided in the coming days. The FDA's action may also lead to more vaccine mandates covering students, employees, and customers. Mandating becomes much easier when you have full approval, said Dr. Carlos Del Rio of Emory University. I think a lot of businesses have been waiting for that. Next, Ford's Maverick truck attracts 100,000 reservations. Ford Motor Company's new tiny truck, the Maverick, is generating lots of early interest with reservations for the hybrid pickup topping 100,000 and demand coming from California markets that typically favor imports. The reservations are non-binding and don't require a deposit, but Ford is confident that they'll convert into orders, as they did with a similar system to set up interest for the electric Mustang Mach-E and revived Bronco SUV. This really has exceeded our expectations, Todd Eckhart, Ford's truck marketing manager, said in an interview. This is the initial step with reservations, but we think it bodes extremely well. Ford Motor Company's new tiny truck, the Maverick, is generating lots of early interest, with reservations for the truck topping 100,000 and demand coming from California markets that typically favor imports. Ford is making a bid for entry-level import buyers with the Maverick, which starts at under $20,000 and gets 40 miles per gallon with a standard gasoline electric hybrid version. The compact pickup is only 6 inches longer than a Toyota Camry sedan. It represents a new effort to reach price-conscious consumers after the automaker dropped the Ford Focus and exited slow-selling sedans in the U.S. So far, Ford says the most reservations are coming from Los Angeles, where the Toyota Tacoma midsize pickup dominates the market. San Francisco ranks third on the Maverick reservation list, behind Orlando, Florida, and just ahead of Houston. The vehicle, which is being built in Mexico, officially goes on sale this fall. Michael Metters, 30, of Costa Mesa, California, has already converted his reservation into an order for a black Maverick with a sticker price of $22,030 after he added some safety-oriented technology upgrades. With a nearly 50-mile round-trip commute to his human resources job in L.A., Metters said he was attracted by the truck's fuel economy and modest size. It's not that much bigger than the Ford Fusion I'm driving, Metters said, so it should be pretty easy to buzz around in heavy traffic in Southern California and find parking. This is Metters' first truck and first new vehicle. Like the growing wave of pickup buyers, he doesn't need a truck for work, but sees benefits in having a bed to haul things. You don't have to work in construction in order to reap the benefits, he said. You could be picking up plants and potting soil or some large items from Costco or even sandy beach chairs, so you don't want to put those inside the cabin. Next, sales of existing homes rise along with inventory. Sales of previously owned U.S. homes rose in July for a second month, indicating firmer housing demand as inventory constraints showed signs of easing. Contract closings increased 2% from the prior month to an annualized 5.99 million, a four-month high, according to figures from the National Association of Realtors on Monday. The median forecast in Bloomberg's survey of economists called for a 5.83 million rate in July. The data suggests that low borrowing costs and demand for more space continue to underpin home purchases for those with the opportunity and wherewithal to trade up. The limited number of homes for sale has been an ongoing headwind for the housing market, driving up asking prices and weighing on affordability. An increase in July inventory is typical this time of year, the NAR said. The housing sector appears to be settling down. Lawrence Yun, NAR's chief economist, said on a conference call, the number of homes available, a key factor for the housing recovery, is showing small increases, he said. The median selling price of a previously owned home rose 17.8% from a year ago to $359,900 in July. High home prices have been constraining demand. Consumers' views of home buying conditions in early August were the most negative on record, according to a University of Michigan survey of consumer confidence. There were 1.32 million homes for sale last month, up 7.3% from the prior month and the most since October. Still, inventory is well below the level a year ago. At the current pace, it would take 2.6 months to sell all the homes on the market. Realtors see anything below 5 months of supply as a sign of a tight market. Properties remained on the market for an average of just 17 days in July, unchanged from a month earlier. Almost 90% of the homes sold last month were on the market for less than a month, the NAR said. All cash sales accounted for 23% of transactions in July, up from 16% a year ago, and further illustrating the scramble to purchase in a hot housing market. Next, Carnival Cruise Line follows other lines requiring vaccines for Bahamas sailings. Carnival Cruise Line took the weekend to decide, but is following other cruise lines that they have made the decision to require vaccines for most of its passengers 12 and older for sailings to the Bahamas. In a press release Sunday, the line announced it was changing protocols to limit passengers on ships to fully vaccinated only if over the age of 12 or if they have a medical condition that prohibits vaccination. Effective August 28 through October for departures from all Atlantic and Gulf home ports, only children under 12 and adults with a medical condition that prohibit their vaccination are exempt from vaccination requirements to sail, the line states. Carnival is advising guests of this update and any guests that have received an exemption applicable through October have been informed of this change and that exemptions beyond these two categories are rescinded. The move comes after Thursday's updated emergency COVID-19 declaration signed by Bahamas Prime Minister Hubert Minnis, which will prohibit cruise ships from entering a Bahamas port, including the many cruise lines, private islands, unless eligible passengers are fully vaccinated. The order, which goes into effect September 3rd and lasts until November 1st, does allow for unvaccinated passengers or crew that have a medical excuse. Royal Caribbean, MSC Cruises, and Celebrity Cruises all updated their sailing policies from Florida on Friday. Norwegian Cruise Line already had a vaccinated-only passenger policy in place. Disney Cruise Line has yet to update its policies as of Monday morning. All of the lines feature the Bahamas as central to their restart plans after more than a year and a half of shutdown because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Some other destinations in the Caribbean, including the U.S. Virgin Islands, Antigua, and Dominica, have similar limitations in place to stop the potential spread of the virus. Cruise lines have had to set limit who can sail on voyages to those destinations as well. The limits are at odds with a Florida law that went into effect on July 1st that prohibits companies from asking for proof of vaccination. The law threatens to fine companies $5,000 per instance for demanding so-called vaccine passports. Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings, which runs NCL, Oceania Cruises, and Regent Seven Seas, took the state to court over the law, and a federal judge granted an injunction against Florida from enforcing it. At present, the case only applies to Norwegian, so it's unclear whether the state will try and enforce the policy on other cruise lines once the limit and vaccine requirements are in effect. Cruise lines were already juggling the law with requirements by the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, which had given cruise lines two avenues to return to business. One was to perform simulated sailings to prove out COVID-19 safety protocols and earn a conditional sailing certificate. The other, which lines like Carnival Celebrity and Norwegian opted for, was the promise to sail with at least 95% vaccinated passengers. Most lines sailing from U.S. ports have in place vaccine requirements for those 12 and older, except in Florida. From Florida, to deal with the law, lines have pivoted to allow for unvaccinated passengers that are eligible to vaccines to sail after all, but have put added cost of required COVID-19 tested and travel insurance on those passengers, as well as some limits on their activities on board. Carnival was allowing unvaccinated passengers from other ships outside of Florida as well, but on a case-by-case basis so that it could stick with the 95% threshold set by the CDC. Most of those were for passengers traveling with children, but the shift in policy did affect some. This actually only affects about 1% or so of people who are booked, said Carnival brand ambassador John Hild. This means that guests who were previously accommodated will not be able to travel, and for that we say a sincere apology. It's a very small group of you, but that should not diminish the disappointment that I know that those people are feeling. Next, pop-up restaurants may stick around as COVID sees resurgence. Pop-up restaurants, many started as stopgap measures by struggling chefs and owners, may have staying power as consumers continue to embrace takeout and delivery, and the Delta variant threatens to make dining in less of an option. Pop-up restaurants can take a variety of forms, from a ramen maker appearing for one night only at an established bar or restaurant, to a taco maker using an unused space to temporarily host dinners, to a chef offering meatballs for delivery only. Cheaper to operate than regular restaurants because they have less overhead and staffing cost, pop-ups let chefs and owners keep working and making a living during the early part of the pandemic when dining rooms were closed and the economy was teetering. They've helped bring buzz to existing restaurants that host them, and some have even morphed into permanent new businesses. Now, as reopenings across the country are threatened by a rise in COVID-19 cases, pop-up creators and hosts are asking, what's next? The restaurant industry has been one of the hardest hit during the pandemic. It is still down 1 million jobs from the pre-pandemic employment level of 12.3 million. Restaurant sales in 2020 totaled $659 million, down $240 million from expected levels, according to the National Restaurant Federation. Sales rebounded this year as the economy recovered and restrictions were lifted, but now some economists are paring back expectations for U.S. economic growth, partly because they expect fewer people to dine out. 2021 is definitely a year of transition for the restaurant industry, said Hudson Real, Senior Vice President of Research for the National Restaurant Federation. The industry is still substantially challenged by the COVID situation. The flexibility of takeout and delivery models helped Alex Thabua meet those challenges. Thabua is co-owner of Electric Burrito, which began as a pop-up at Mr. Paradise Bar in New York in 2020. A permanent location opened in May and is focused on takeout and delivery. So even if there is another lockdown, the restaurant will be able to operate, he said. This flexibility was something we found very important during our pop-up stages when the world was getting locked down and heavy restrictions were being placed on businesses, he said. We've designed our operations in a way that we can continue to operate with a lean team, with every safety precaution taken, to be able to serve guests in both a to-go and delivery capacity. Hawthorne, a restaurant in Nashville, has hosted about 10 pop-ups featuring local area chefs since the pandemic began. For the pop-ups, it's a way to get exposure and have access to a full kitchen. For Hawthorne, it's a way to fill seats on nights that ordinarily be empty. Since reopening for in-person dining in October, the restaurant is open just Wednesday through Saturday. We knew when we reopened we were not going to be able to be open 6 or 7 days a week because staffing and business wasn't going to be there, said John Stevenson, Hawthorne's owner. I knew I wanted to utilize the space. A Nashville chef for decades, Stevenson knew a number of chefs who were trying to stay afloat during the pandemic with projects like creating takeout dinners or starting food trucks, he said. The first pop-up at Hawthorne started in October with a Mexican theme from Julio Hernandez centered around his homemade tortilla. It was a success, and more pop-ups followed. Currently, Hawthorne hosts Michael Hanna's focaccia-based pizza company, St. Vito Focaccia, every Sunday. Hannah and his staff get work, and it keeps people coming in our doors, Stevenson said. The arrangement with St. Vito is long-term, so we hired Hannah as a chef. Hannah gets a percentage of the Sunday sales. Hawthorne pays for all products and labor. Stevenson said he plans to keep on having pop-ups even after the pandemic wanes rather than reopening full-time. Next, Pfizer to acquire cancer drug maker Trillium for $2.3 billion. Pfizer, Inc., maker of a top-selling COVID vaccine, will buy all the shares of Trillium Therapeutics, Inc. if it doesn't own, gaining the immune cancer drug maker for an equity share of $2.26 billion. Pfizer will pay $18.50 a share for Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Trillium, the company said Monday in a statement. The price represents a 118% premium to the stock's 60-day weighted average price. Pfizer invested $25 million in Trillium in September as part of its breakthrough growth initiative when Jeff Settleman, Senior Vice President of Pfizer's Oncology Research and Development Group, was named to Trillium Scientific Advisory Board. Trillium's two lead molecules, TTI-622 and TTI-621, block signaling proteins involved in blood cancers and are both in human trials across several types of disease. They target CD47, a protein found on some cancer cells that cloaks them from normal immune response and sends a signal activating the response. Early clinical data for both molecules is encouraging, and they're expected to become another important backbone immunotherapy for multiple types of cancer, especially those of the blood. Chris Boshoff, Pfizer's chief development officer for oncology, said in the statement. Blood cancers represent 6% of all tumor diagnoses across the world, according to the statement. Last year, more than 1 million people worldwide were diagnosed with some form of blood cancer, and more than 700,000 people died from the disease. Next, felon voting rights law unconstitutional, NC court rules. Judges have restored voting rights to an estimated 55,000 North Carolinians on parole or probation for a felony. GOP state lawmakers who were defending the law in court plan to appeal Monday's ruling to a higher court. But if the ruling is upheld on appeal, then people convicted of felonies in North Carolina will regain their right to vote once they leave prison. Everyone on felony probation, parole, or post-supervision release can now register and vote. Starting today, the challenger's lawyer, Stanton Jones, said in a text message Monday morning after the ruling came down. Most U.S. states allow people with a felony record to regain their voting rights at some point after leaving prison, according to the National Conference of State Legislators. Some have the same rules that North Carolina had until Monday's ruling, requiring people to first finish their probation or parole, but a larger number have the rules that the judges have now switched North Carolina to, with people regaining their rights as soon as they leave prison. It's the biggest expansion of voting rights in North Carolina since the 1960s, said Daryl Atkinson, co-director of Durham civil rights group Forward Justice, and a lawyer for the challengers in this case. Our biggest quarrels in this state have been over what groups of people have a voice at the ballot box to be included in We the People, Atkinson said at a press conference Monday, later adding, today we enlarge the we in We the People. The law challengers argue that felon disenfranchisement laws were explicitly created to stop black people from voting in the years after the Civil War and coincided with a widespread campaign to accuse newly freed black people of felonies, troubling trends, they say, which have continued into the current day. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.